I have 2 points today. Number one, Jesus fixes stories he's in. Make sure he's part of yours. Jairus was a ruler at the synagogue. He was well-known, well-respected. Jairus had money, success. He was connected to God. He was part of the local volunteer fire department. He coached his daughter's Little League soccer team. People looked up to Jairus. They liked how he lived. They asked for his advice. There was a popular ad campaign for running sandals back then. Be like Jai. But then his daughter got ill, and she kept getting worse until she was really sick. And you know that Jairus had all the best doctors in. His congregation posted her picture on Facebook, and everyone prayed for the girl, but nothing helped. And some friends told Jairus and his wife that they best start making funeral arrangements. There was nothing more to do, they said. But Jairus would not accept that. There was something else that he could do. He could go ask Jesus for help. Now, Jesus was not sanctioned by the Jewish CDC. He was not on the medically approved list. He was not on the religiously approved list, this young rabble-rousing preacher. Some leaders back then thought Jesus was a con man. Some people thought that he had sold his soul to the devil to do what he was doing. Most people thought Jesus was great and could do no wrong, but respectable Jews steered clear. But now Jairus, a respectable Jew, has a 12-year-old daughter who's dying, and Jairus doesn't care anymore about respectable. He just wants his girl better. And word on the street is that Jesus can make sick people well. So doesn't matter what other people might say about him, Jairus wants Jesus in his story. Mark chapter 5, verse 21 says, "When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, a man named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at Jesus' feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, 'My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live.'" Verse 24 says, "So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him." And you got to know, at this point in the story, Jairus feels like he has just won the lottery, right? Jesus is now part of what's going on. Did you hear about the guy who went to the Broadway play about fly fishing? He said the cast was amazing. That's what Jairus is thinking right now. He's thinking, wow, I just landed the healer. He's now got the one guy in all the world who might be able to actually make his daughter well again. And they're headed towards his home. It was risky for him to leave his daughter's side that morning, but the way it's going, Jairus thinks, this might actually work out all right. Enter the other lady, stage right, or stage left, or sneaking up from behind. Here's this lady's story. She's living life fine until 12 years ago when she started to bleed, which, when ladies had those kinds of issues in that day, they were disqualified. They were disqualified from everything, from church, from friends, from family, from marriage. If you had that problem, you were done back then. Because anybody who touched anybody who had blood issues had to be isolated for 7 days. No joke. They had to go away for 7 days. So not only could she not do normal life, nobody who connected with her could do life either. So nobody connected with her. For the last 12 years, she has spent everything she's had to try to get better. But she didn't get better. She kept bleeding. And people kept social distancing. And if you're wondering how people knew about her private problem, it was a small town. And friends talk, and family talks, and doctors talk. And it was such an embarrassing thing, too. Like she had venereal disease or something. It was a shameful situation for her. And she tried everything, but nothing ever helped. But lately, she's been watching Jesus fix people. And she thinks, maybe he could help me. But she's got nothing to offer. Nobody likes her. She's got no friends. She's got no money left. She has nothing to offer Jesus in exchange. And yet she's so sure that he could make her better. So she comes up with this plan. In Mark chapter 5, verse 27, it says, "When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, 'If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed.' Immediately," when she did that, immediately, it says, "her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. She thought Jesus had the power to somehow fix her. And she touched him, and he did. Jesus made her body healthy again. For the first time in 12 years, she was good. She felt it. He fixed her. She knew it instantly. And of course, so did he. And it's a funny story at that point. He stops. The whole crowd stops. And Jesus looks around and says, "Who touched me?" And the disciples said, "Everybody? It's a mob scene, Jesus. They're all touching you." And Jesus said, "Nope, somebody touched me." And he just stood there looking around. Eventually, the lady stepped forward, probably with her head down. She did not want this to go public. That's why she snuck up behind him. But he had fixed her. So she stepped forward and she fell at his feet. And she told her whole story. And Jesus smiled and said, "Okay, you can go." Verse 34, he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." I think Jesus stopped and singled her out here for two reasons. Both of them were really quite thoughtful on his part. Number one, he wanted her to know that what she'd done was okay by him. In fact, he actually liked what she had just done. And number two, Jesus wanted everybody there in that whole town to know this lady was healed and she was now free to go on with life. Did you hear about the guy who every time he fell off his bike, he just climbed back on and kept going? He was a firm believer in recycling. Jesus gave this lady a brand new life. Such a cool story. The lady loved it. Jesus loved it. The crowd loved it. Everybody loved it, except Jairus. Do you remember what Jairus had come to see Jesus about? Jairus wasn't sure that Jesus remembered that. His daughter was going to die. Maybe that day they really needed to hurry. So while all this lady healing stuff was going on, Jairus is standing over on the side impatiently waiting. Finally, Jesus turns to him and says, "Okay, Jairus, now we can go." And Jairus goes, "Great, let's go." And they started down the road only to see some friends of Jairus heading his way. And when they got close, Jairus yells, "He's coming. He said he would do it. We're coming. Jesus is coming." And they said, "Really sorry to tell you this, Jairus, but it's too late. Your daughter died. No need bringing the teacher with you anymore. She's gone. When you left today, she died." I don't know how that felt. Fortunately, I have never had someone tell me something like that. But I know some of you have. Some of you have lost children. And Jairus's little girl was 12 years old. I don't know how he felt, but I'm guessing it all went dark right there, and Jairus probably collapsed on the road. She was gone. He was too late. She was gone. He hadn't gotten Jesus there in time. But do you remember point one in today's sermon? Jesus fixes stories. So Jesus helps Jairus to his feet, and Jesus says, "Don't worry, I'll go with you." And they head out. And when they get close to the house, people are crying, people are sobbing, wailing, "It's ugly. A little girl just died." And Jesus walks up and says, "What's your problem? Everybody calm down. She's just asleep." At which point, the friends who had come to tell Jairus that the daughter had died probably looked at Jesus and said, "What?" And the people who were at the house weeping looked at Jesus and said, "What?" And Jesus said, "She's not dead, she's just sleeping." And now some of the people start to laugh, but not a happy laugh like, "Oh, good, Jesus is going to fix all this." More of a sneering laugh like, "Jesus, you idiot, what are you talking about? How can you say that? That's so cruel, she's dead." So Jesus took his guys and Jairus and his wife into the room where the girl's body lay. In verse 41 of Mark chapter 5, it says, Jesus took her by the hand. He took the little girl by the hand and he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. At this, they were completely astonished. And why wouldn't they be? You would be if Jesus raised somebody you knew from the dead. If you're at a funeral home, calling hours, people are talking, and somebody walks over to the casket, reaches in and says, "Get up." And suddenly the dead person sat up and started talking. They were completely astonished, staring at their very much alive again daughter. Verse 43 of Mark 5 says, Jesus gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this. and told them to give her something to eat. I'm guessing people are going to know about this, but there's going to be a lot of confusion about what really happened. And Jesus isn't ready to deal with people who all the time want him to raise people they know from the dead. So he says, shh. I have a footnote here. Apparently, being raised from the dead makes you hungry. Because after Lazarus was brought back, Lazarus came back from the dead. The next thing we see him doing is eating at a banquet. And when Jesus came back on the day that he rose from the dead, he asked his guys if they happened to have any sandwiches around. And here's Jesus telling the girl's mother and father, feed her. She's probably hungry after the day she had. Apparently, being raised from the dead makes you hungry. I can't wait to eat. End of footnote. Can you imagine how Jairus felt here, right here? Can you envision what Mrs. Jairus is feeling right now? They got their little girl back. That Ohio girl this week who went missing, but somebody then posted that she'd been found and there was rejoicing all over America. But Jairus' daughter hasn't just been missing, she's been dead. And now she wasn't. And the lady who had the medical condition that ruined her life for 12 years, she's starting over brand new that same day. Her life is now completely different because, point one, Jesus fixes stories. So my question is, what's broken in your story? What's really broken? Like I'm talking, it's dead. For all intents, all purposes, you know it can't be fixed. What is it in your story? Your marriage? Whatever once was, isn't, and you know won't ever be again, there's no way. Your finances, did the shutdown take what was already shaky and just finish you? Your health, are you in trouble with your health? Maybe like a friend of ours who just this week had brain surgery? How about your friendships, your career, your kids? What's so bad in your life right now that it'll never be good again? I don't know what feels impossible to you this morning, but Jesus fixes stories. Still. Okay, here's the best joke that I got this week. Do you know where in the store the Terminator finds toilet paper? I'll be back. Don't yell at me, just send me better material. That's all I'm asking. But I do have a store story here. Ron and Gretchen Bruno are missionaries in Guatemala, and they tell of a poor widow in their congregation who, at one point in her life, only had 20 cents to her name and no food. And this widow prayed, and when she finished praying, she felt a deep conviction from God that she should go to the supermarket the next day and fill up several carts with groceries and take them all to checkout stand number 7. Now, that was all strange to her. She didn't know what it really meant, but the idea stuck with her all day and all night, and the next morning, she decided she was just going to do what she thought God was telling her to do. So she went to the store, she loaded up enough groceries to last 2 or 3 months, and she took all those carts to checkout stand number 7, and just as she got to that stand, the cashier there closed for lunch. And he suggested that the lady take her carts to a different aisle because he was going to lunch. But the woman said, no, I cannot. She said, my father told me to take them through checkout stand 7. And he said, suit yourself, but I'm going to lunch. So he took off and she waited right there. And when he came back later, he was surprised to see her still standing there with all her carts. But he started to check her out. Just then, an announcement came over the loudspeaker. And the announcement said, today marks the 7th year anniversary of our business, and we are pleased to announce that whoever's checking out in checkout stand number 7 right now gets free groceries. Jesus still fixes things. He fixes things. Amazingly, he can fix things. Al Hamilton is a preacher that I met about 50 years ago through the church that I grew up with. Mr. Hamilton was talking with a Christian man one day who had decided that he was going to commit suicide. He told Al Hamilton he had the method, he had the time, he knew he was going to do it. And Al Hamilton obviously tried to talk him out of it, but the man said, no, I'm going to do it. So he invited him to go for a ride with him, and they drove around all afternoon. And the whole time, Al Hamilton kept asking God for wisdom. What could he say? But no matter what Al Hamilton said, this guy was still sure he was going to do it. Then Al Hamilton had an idea. He said, wait, you're a Christian, right? And the man said, right. He said, but you want to die, right? And the man said, right, and you're not gonna talk me out of it. And Al Hamilton said, yeah, I know, fine, that's fine. Die if you want to, but why don't you let God decide when you die? And the guy said, what are you talking about? And this is back when Idi Amin was the dictator in Uganda. And Al Hamilton said, well, we're trying to get Bibles to Christians in Uganda, but we can't get any in because Idi Amin keeps killing any Christian who comes into his country. So since you're going to die anyway, why don't you take some Bibles with you into Uganda, and that way you'll die, but at least it'll do some good. And the guy thought about it, and he said, okay, you're on. They flew this man to the Uganda border, and they strapped Bibles all over his body. And he walked down the main road into Uganda, and soldiers saw him, and they knew what he was doing. He was carrying stacks of Bibles with him, but they just watched him as he walked by. They ignored him as he walked in. So he walked in, he gave the Bibles away, and he walked back out after delivering the Bibles, mad because he was still alive. So he loaded himself up with another ton of Bibles, and he walked right back in. It wasn't that they didn't see him, they saw him. They just didn't do anything about him. And when he left Uganda the second time that day, he knew God didn't want him to be dead, and he decided to live. Jesus can fix stories. Miraculously, any story. The lady who was hungry in Guatemala, the guy who was despairing of life in Uganda, amazing. A lady who was sick for 12 years, a guy whose daughter had just died. Jesus could fix what was not right in their lives, and he can fix what's not right in your life too. Nothing is too much for him. Nothing. Point one today, Jesus fixes stories that he's in. Make sure he's part of your story. Point number two, he doesn't always. Don't be mad. Last week we talked about Jesus feeding the hungry 5,000 people and then walking on the water in the storm with Peter. This week we talk about Jesus healing this lady who had been bleeding for 12 years and bringing a dead girl to life. All of those things really happened, and they're all in the do you believe in miracles category. But all of those things happened immediately following Jesus's best guy having his head cut off. Right before these wondrous deliverances, John the Baptizer had been jailed and beheaded. Later on in Scripture, we're going to read about the angel who busted Peter out of jail the night before his scheduled execution, which is nice, but that page in Acts starts off with James, of James and John fame, being executed. Same page. We read of Paul being so hated for talking of Jesus that they threw bricks at his head trying to kill him. And somehow Paul walked away from that. But that's just a few pages after Stephen died of a smashed head. For every story of an unbelievable fix that Jesus arranges for his people in Scripture, there's always a story where he didn't fix it. Seems like he could have. Maybe even like if he could have, he should have. But he didn't. Don't be mad. Do you remember what John the Baptist asked Jesus from his prison cell? John got thrown in a dungeon because the authorities determined that his speech was dangerous. And from his cell, John sent a question to Jesus. He said, "Are you the one, or should we look for another?" And Jesus sent an answer back to John. He said, "Tell John what you have heard and seen. The blind see, the lame walk, lepers are clean, deaf hear, the dead are raised, and good news is told to all." And John knew that Jesus was doing all those things. Everybody had heard that Jesus was doing that stuff. But John also knew that Jesus wasn't raising everybody who died. He wasn't making every leper healthy. Some deaf people still couldn't hear. Some paralyzed people still couldn't walk. Some people who were blind still were. Jesus did a lot of good things for a lot of people, but he didn't fix everyone. And John heard that, and he thought about that. And he realized, so I'm in jail, but that doesn't mean Jesus is bad. I'm just not one of the ones who has been freed by him yet. And the last line Jesus sent John, I think Jesus sends to us all. In Matthew 11:6, Jesus said, "Blessed is the one who is not offended by me." Jesus said, "John, just because I haven't fixed your story right now doesn't mean I won't eventually. Blessed is the one who's not offended by me. Blessed is the one who doesn't get mad at me even though I haven't fixed their story yet. See, Jesus fixes stories he's in, but sometimes he doesn't. Don't get mad. It's like the meme I saw this week. It said, a study shows that parents can do one-third of their kids' math problems easily, but they have a really hard time with the other three-quarters. Do you know that 5 out of 4 Americans have problems with fractions? Something doesn't add up there, right? Have you ever thought this? Have you ever thought, if Jesus can fix my story, why isn't he? Why don't I have more friends, some friends, a friend? Why can't I have a graduation ceremony this year? Why do I have such a lousy job? Why can't I be the one to get promoted once in a while? Why can't I win the lottery? Why can't I have a rich uncle leave me inheritance? Why can't the stimulus check get through to me? Why can't my kids be smart, athletic, funny, talented, beautiful? Why can't my kids win the lottery? Why can't the Bills play in a different division? Why didn't I grow up near Boston or Tampa Bay? Have you ever felt mad that God isn't arranging your life differently? Do you ever get annoyed, maybe downright angry, because God won't fix stuff, even when you really ask him to? Because it seems so clear to you how your life should go, how your life could go, if only God would help you. Jesus says, blessed is the one who's not offended by me. As coach of the Baltimore Orioles, Earl Weaver had a rule on his team: nobody stole a base without permission. You could not steal a base unless you were given the sign. In 1976, in the middle of a close game, Reggie Jackson got on first base, and he knew that he could steal on this catcher, but he was not given the green light. But Reggie thought that was dumb. He knew he could make it, so he stole second base anyway. Made it by a mile, stood up, brushed himself off, pretty pleased with himself. After the game, the manager, Earl Weaver, explained to Reggie why that had hurt the team. He said, Reggie, when you took second base, you left first base open, which means they could walk our power hitter, Lee May, behind you, our best hitter. They walked him. And then the batter after Lee May wasn't as very strong against that pitcher, so I had to put a pinch hitter in for him in that inning. And that pinch hitter wasn't available for us when we really needed him in the last inning of the game, all because you stole second base. Earl Weaver said, you were looking at that inning. I was looking at the whole game. Probably a lot of the time that we're not happy with Jesus' choices, it's because we're looking at what would make life easy, and Jesus is looking at what would make life better. We're looking at what we want, and he's looking at what we need. We see what would be good for us, and he sees how we could be good for others. Probably a lot of the time we're not happy with Jesus' choices, we're looking at this inning, and Jesus is looking at the whole game. Jesus said, blessed is the one who's not offended by me. Sometimes Jesus delivers miraculously, just what you need, just in time, just right. But sometimes he delivers, it seems, not at all. And you're absolutely sure it will not work out well. You do life his way, and it not only doesn't pay, it costs you. You can't catch a break ever. And you think, Jesus, if this is how you treat friends, if this is how you treat your friends, it's no wonder you don't have many. But Jesus says, blessed is the one who is not offended by me. So if you cut down a tree in the woods, but the tree doesn't know why you're doing it, is it stumped? Are you stumped? Don't be offended when you can't figure out what Jesus is doing in your life. And if stuff seems really wrong in your life right now, and the more you think about it, the madder you get, or the sadder you get, remember John, who was in a dungeon, and they came down and they pulled him out and they drug him to a chopping block. That was all so messed up. But the last thing John's thinking in this life was probably this line: he remembered that Jesus said, "Blessed is the one who is not offended by me." I have 2 points today. Sometimes Jesus fixes stories he's in right now. Blessed be he. Sometimes not right now. And if you can live with that, blessed be ye.